Hey, everybody. How you doing? It's Steph. Oh, let me do my hair. How is everyone doing tonight? How are you, my friends? Thank you for your support. freedomain.locals.com. Don't forget to come by and check out the book. I'm listening to it still every night before I go to bed. I'm listening to The Future by me, read by me as an audiobook, and it's really, really good. So I'm going to strongly urge you that if you need a pick-me-up, if you need to find a way to get yourself feeling happier about things in the world and what we're aiming for and where we're going to get to over time, please, please check out The Future at freedomain.locals.com, and you can just subscribe and do a little bit of support, a cup of coffee a month, and it would really help me out, and I think you'll get a great book. Oh, I got something. So people are saying, where are the call-in shows? Well, I'm getting them together. I just put together one. It's almost 5 hours long, and it's a man talking about his relationship, followed by the woman talking about their relationship and the problems and the challenges and the excitements they have with just about every dimension. And the he said, she said stuff to me is always really cool and really fascinating. So I hope that you will check it out. It'll be out soon. It'll come out first on Locals and then other places as well. So do we do a question here? Do we do stuff from you, which of course I'm always happy to hear, or do we do a rant? What is your particular preference? Would you like a rant, or would you like me to answer questions? Comments on Tesla selling 75% of Bitcoin, its potential effects. Well, I mean, Bitcoin went down because people thought inflation was transitory. Inflation was transitioning to transitory, but then it transitioned back to non-transitory, and now it's permanent and escalating. So, yeah, where are you going to put your money? I think people are figuring out that crypto may not be the worst place to shield your money from inflation, especially since they discovered double the amount of gold ever mined in Uganda, I think, recently, which I'm sure means that the American foreign policy will focus on it soon. So, yeah, I think people can buy, people can sell. All right. Nice to meet you. Oh, St. Effin. Yeah. You want to rant? Okay. Okay. So, you know, there are certain entities, it's a tough time communicating, right? You couldn't figure out ancient hieroglyphics until you got the Rosetta Stone, which had a bunch of different languages and hieroglyphics, so you could figure them out. Carrier pigeons, yeah, they can fly into propeller blades, they can get shot down, they can end up wound around Marlon Brando's sweaty torso in On the Waterfront. Lots of people, Helen Keller, Deaf, Dumb, and Blind, Tommy from The Who, a lot of people have a tough time communicating. You know what I can't figure out? Why is this so tough to communicate? I will tell you a story. So, 30 years ago, I was a temp, right? So, between undergraduate and graduate school, I did a gap year, and I wrote some novels, and I was a temp. And I worked at a company that was developing machines to allow people to automatically deposit checks over the internet. Now, I was in charge of keeping all the documents together, all the presentation materials, making sure everything flowed and was updated and was attractive, because they had this giant, massive presentation to a bank on, boy, you know, people can submit checks over the internet and they can just be dropped into your account. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be fantastic. Now, this is 30 years ago when computers were basically potatoes and the internet was 3 cups of yogurt with some string between it. 30 years, my friends, 30 years they've had a chance to perfect this technology. Simple scan, upload, little OCR, little optical character recognition into your account. Thanks. Fantastic. Now, I've been used to banking being inconvenient for a good chunk of my life. So it used to be back in the day, there were no bank machines. And the only way you could get a hold of your money was banks would be open between 10 in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which meant that you would have a lineup that was like people fleeing Germany In 1938, you'd have this lineup out of the bank that would just go on and on and on because everyone was like, oh my God, I've got to have money for the weekend. Banks sometimes weren't even open on Fridays. You had Monday to Thursday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Banker's hours. What do they say about bankers? How do you do it as a banker? Well, you borrow at 3%, you lend at 6%, you go play golf at 3 o'clock. It's simple, easy peasy. So I was used to banking being massively inconvenient. But 30 years ago, in the dawn of a new era, the bank could take your check, have a look at it, and just deposit it. Now, not only was the internet slow, not only were computers slow, not only were websites extraordinarily primitive, but people also had, as I started out, fine old 240p webcams, if you were lucky. So, optical character recognition. Now, back in the day, you know, I got to think 30 years ago. Gosh, what are we talking here? 30 years ago. Wow, 1992. Yeah, I think it was a scanning machine. It was a scanning machine. It wasn't over the internet. It was a scanning machine. So the checks would be fed into the machine. It would scan them and figure out how to do the deposit, right? So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, my friends. Let's dip out of the philosophy for just a moment. Let me ask you this. How do you find depositing checks over the internet? Anybody? Anybody? How's it been for you to deposit checks over the internet? Pretty smooth? Pretty easy? Oh, I must be cursed. I must be cursed. So, yeah, I have a mobile app. Try to deposit a check. The mobile app doesn't just give me an error. It doesn't say I can't read your check. It just completely reboots. It exits the app with no warning. It's a hard crash. Reboots. So then I'm like, okay, well, I'll just, scan off a webcam. Nope. It's got to be on a dark surface. Okay. This isn't dark enough, right? Okay. So then you've got to go around like a ferret looking for the last nut in February, trying to find a dark surface that needs to be lit by a flash, but non-reflective. So apparently you need to place your check over physically what Stephen Hawking would call a black hole. You get that check over a black hole, and you get the Hubble fucking telescope to zoom in on it and get it at 6,000 pixels per square millimeter, and just maybe, you will be able... Oh, also, you need a pen that also carves the... It's a pen that doesn't just run on dark ink. It runs on dark matter. The pen must be so dark that it sucks the light, in fact, the enthusiasm, the joy, and anything positive out of your life just to endorse the check. It's just wild. This technology is just crap. So when people are like, ooh, AI is going to take over the world, man. AI is going to take over the world. It's like, I would be a little bit more alarmed at AI if it could figure out what a check is in a picture. Because also, you know, I don't have like some potato cam old phone. I don't have a super new phone, but I have a phone that has a pretty high res, at least compared to what I was working with, say, 30 years ago. It's wild just how bad some of this technology is. And It clusters for me where it's just like everything I try technically sucks like a vacuum, blows like a narwhal, and it's just wild. Somebody says, yes, I've had a bank app crash while trying to mobile. You'd think that would be something you'd error check a little bit for. Hard crashes on the banking app. Oh, man. Just crazy. What's a check? Yeah. Just pretty wild. So, yeah, the computers may take over the world, but first they have to read checks. Somebody says, have a black three-ring binder and take photos of the check on it. Yeah, I mean, I did it on a chair, but every surface got a little bit of reflection if you've got a flash on, right? Or they say, make sure it's brightly lit, but no shadows, right? So you've got to put the check down on the whatever, right? And then you've got to hold the camera right over the check, which blocks any overhead light and puts lots of shadows on it. So then you have to use a flash, but then it reflects everything. I don't know, it's pretty funny. Why? Why am I taking questions? Yes, I am taking questions. I just wanted to get that. And for me, I'm hyper/hysterical So when there's these kinds of delays, you know, when it's just like, you just cross your fingers, you know, it's like, I have endorsed this with the black. I have endorsed this on ink so black, it makes Nancy Pelosi's heart juice look blonde. That is how black I've endorsed this. And it's like, no, I can't find the endorsement, man. It's like, do you need it written in the blood of Satan? What weird rituals do I need to perform to get this to work? So, I'm sensing a business opportunity. Check lighting technician. Yeah, so it's like I had 3 checks to deposit. Took me 45 minutes. So I'm back to banking from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday to Thursday. And if you need money for the weekend, you've got to make sure you get into that bank. And so you sit there in the bank with a class after lunch, because I'd be in high school or whatever. I sit there lining up. I need money for the weekend. Going to go out. Going to go to a party. Going to whatever, right? Going to go to a movie. I need money for the weekend. This is long before visas or card machines or any ATMs or anything. So, yeah, I need money for the weekend. You line up. Got to get to my class in the afternoon. But the line is moving really slowly. Because, you know, you get there and there's one. There's always one woman who wants to deposit about, conservatively, $16,000 to $18,000 in pennies. I found these in the basement. Must have been left here by my great uncle. I think they're all legal tender. Some of them could be Roman coins because he was kind of old. I need to start counting these out bit by bit. What do you think about midlife crisis? I think my husband is going through one. So midlife crisis is when you feel, and you may be right, probably are right, when you feel you have underachieved. Underachieved. And if you feel like you've underachieved, if you had big dreams when you were younger, but you didn't pursue those dreams, it doesn't mean you're going to get them, but if you pursue the dreams, right? Like I was like, oh, I'd love to be an actor. Okay, auditioned, went to the National Theatre School, was very successful as an actor, and I think you can tell that when I do my audiobooks. Very successful as an actor, but I found the theater world to be, creepy and evil, frankly. Creepy and evil. And theater people to be creepy and evil. The arts are creepy and evil. I was just reading this Alanis Morissette piece she wrote a year or two ago about how she was sexually assaulted as a teenager, and she says just about every, in the music industry, like just about every woman she knows of in the music industry is being attacked, assaulted, raped, exploited, something like that. The art world is like creepy and evil. The art world is a giant Venus flytrap to suck ambitious people who want to bring beauty to the world, turn them inside out, drain their souls, and move on. I've got this great line. I'm going to read this. I'm going to read this from my book. I'm going to read this from, this is a guy, a teenager, or describing his life as a teenager, about what parties are. No, don't do that, man. When I click Control F, put me in the find box. Otherwise, I type into the actual document. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is a guy talking about a party and what happened to a friend of his at a party. I was at the party that killed her. And it wasn't, until then, a rollicking good time. Beauty and wealth often go hand in hand because men with money marry women with looks, and those looks pass on to their children. Pretty people, pretty houses, pretty cars. That the world wants to gorge itself to death on such ephemeral candy floss is not my invention, but I would be damned if I would not exploit it to the end. We had a DJ, a jello pool, professional dancers, inflatables in the swimming pool, and all the booze and weed that young livers and lungs could handle. New arrivals were told that the upstairs were off limits, which kept the bedrooms free for those in the know. Oh, there was a lot of fresh meat in attendance. People who had swallowed the nonsense that parties were just great fun, the stuff of Great Gatsby memories, where social status was cemented, the grappling hooks of giggling subjugation could be fired up to raise yourself to a higher level, that all the drinks and lights and shaking asses were a social oasis, well worth betraying your parents, your conscience, your soul, and your God to drink deep from. We knew better. We had created this mirage of temptation. The purpose of the party was to undo innocence and nothing else. It has always struck me as strange that people know for a simple fact that the devil is attractive, but still chase these pretty delusions off a cliff. Beauty is a gilded mousetrap that clamps down on your future. Thankfully, priests no longer warn the young of this, so they follow their senses straight out of Eden. Ah, the night was beautiful. The scent of young eagerness intoxicating. One could almost hear the panting desire of the newcomers to trade all their tomorrows for one. What? What did they want to trade everything for? We knew what we were after. I never had a clue what they really wanted. Perhaps a commercial they could climb into and live in forever, becoming as flat as the screen. Maybe everyone spent so many years watching people having fun that they imagined that fun was being watched. So they made fools of themselves to gain attention. But clowns are the lowest form of comedy, except life itself. So, that's my little bit about parties. Woo, very nice. All right, that's from my novel, The Future, which you really need to check out. Oh, so something wrong with the audio? Something wrong with the video? All right, let's catch up to your questions. My apologies. Where to find virtuous family-oriented women? I'm going to have to do a show on this because every single freaking show, people have this question. I don't know if you're not listening to previous shows. Of course, you don't have to listen to every show, but you got to live your values. If you value athletics, go join an athletic club. If you value literature, go and join a literary club. Go and join a book club. Just go find people in different ways in different places. Just swiping online is not going to do it. You need to find something where there's people face to face. You can go to church. You can go to a philosophy club. You can start up a philosophy meetup. You can just make an environment or find the environment where people's values are most likely to match yours and then be relentlessly cynical and skeptical about the quality of the people there. You'll find it. Steph, I try to make eye contact with strangers in public or common places. I notice that most people do not. I attempt to make eye contact with other people in general. Am I committing violations when I attempt to connect with others for half a second? Why the hell do you want to make eye contact with people? I'm not quite sure why you would want to do that. Eye contact in the animal world is usually considered either seductive or aggressive, so. Do you think there is a connection between the sexual revolution and the modern-day fat, pride, body positivity movement? No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but the modern-day body positivity movement is, so, it's a, I was showing my daughter the other day a picture of the old singer Fats Domino. And she's like, he's not even that fat. It's like, yeah, he's not even that fat. He'd be considered kind of average in America, at least, and other places as well. He'd be considered kind of average now. But he was called Fats Domino because apparently he was just so fat. So when a group is small enough, and it used to be that obese people were in the single digits, right? 5%, 7% or whatever, right? And so when they're small enough, they don't have much of a swing on culture. People who are overweight tend to make less money. They tend to have less financial impact, and therefore a market doesn't exist to cater to them. So if there's, it's a small number of overweight people and they don't have much money, the culture and the markets don't adapt to satisfy with them. But when you start to get, 20, 30, 40, 50% of people being significantly overweight and you have a welfare state and other things and government employment that just puts money into their pockets, so to speak, then the demand creates a supply of justifications. So if you have, when I was a kid, getting clothes for big people, it's one of the reasons you wouldn't get overweight, you couldn't get clothes. Like you couldn't order online. I mean, there usually would be like one or two, big and tall stores in a city and you'd have to go there, but it was kind of shameful and all of that. So you just, I can't fit into any clothes. If I go up one more size, so, you know, there just wasn't a big market. But where you have a big market, you have a cultural shift. So when people have a guarantee, like women in particular, it happens with men too, but when women in particular, when they have a guaranteed source of income, they're less likely to take care of themselves. So if a woman, normally, if she marries a guy and she wants the guy to keep working for her and she wants to have the guy to take care of her in her old age and to make enough money, because he's going to die sooner statistically, to make enough money to take care of in her old age, so she has to keep herself attractive, because men have the sexual power in their 40s plus that women have in their 20s. So the big question for a man is, it's the Leonardo DiCaprio question, why wouldn't I trade you in? Right? Why wouldn't I trade? I can have another family. I mean, Mick Jagger's producing kids into his 70s, right? Or 80s. I don't know. Is he 80s now? So the big question for a man is, okay, biologically, genetically, I've raised my family with you, right? 20 to 40, we raised our family, maybe 45. And now I'm making a lot of money, right? Most men hit their peak earning in their 40s and 50s, right? So I'm making a lot of money. And you're less attractive than you used to be. Again, this is just cold-eyed. This is not love thing. This is just a cold-eyed analysis, right? The man can look at the woman and say, okay, yeah, you're kind of pudging out. Your body's been wrecked by a couple of kids, so to speak. And I'm in demand. I could just trade you in for a younger model. I guess in Leonardo DiCaprio's case, literally a younger model. So why wouldn't I do a round two? Why wouldn't I do a double lap? Why wouldn't I do round two? Just divorce you, get a younger woman, have family. Again, have another family, right? Now, monogamy is supposed to fix this, right? By, you know, until death do us part, and better and worse, sickness and health and so on, right? So you can't. And social shaming used to deal with this, right? So people who were divorced would be kicked out of society, or at least sort of good, polite society. So why doesn't the man simply look at his wife, who's 45, and say, well, you're too old to have kids. I can still have kids for another couple of decades. I can easily, 45 to 65, I could just raise another family. I can kick you to the curb, raise another family. Well, of course, some people are nice in relationships because they just know that love and positivity and all those things are good. But a lot of people are nice in relationships because the consequences of not being nice are bad. Right? So if you've dealt a lot with government workers, most not good. Because no incentive, right? But occasionally a few of them will be dedicated to government service, to customer service, and they have this inner drive. You know, like in the Soviet Union, there were some waiters who came and brought you your food and were pleasant, but, you know, most waiters get paid either way and don't want to be bothered waiting, serving on you. So there are some people who have, very few people, I think, maybe 5% of the population have this internal drive. Doesn't matter what happens out there in the circumstances, I'm going to have this internal drive for quality or whatever, right? But most people take their cues from voluntarism. Now, let's be different in the future and all that, but most people take their cues from the environment, which is why in the free market, you tend to get better service, higher quality, fewer wait times, and all of that, right? Like, you know the bigger the size of the corporation. You know the size of the corporation by the length of the wait time, right? You know the stupid shit you get. You phone them up and they say, oh, we're experiencing higher than normal call volume, so you're going to have to wait for... Gosh, what was I waiting for the other day? That's right. I had been overcharged, picked up the phone, called the company, 1 hour. 1 hour to get this resolved. And I remember I had a long conversation with them and I said, look, you just cost me an hour of my life. You overcharged me. Well, we're giving you your money back. It's like, you can't give me my hour back. What you guys need to do is to have a we messed up system. Like, we messed up, so we're going to give you 2 free months. We're going to give you a bonus. We're going to give you some whatever, right? Some positive things, a gift certificate or whatever. You got to have a we messed up. Because if I mess up, like if I don't pay my bill, you charge me interest. So if I mess up, you charge me extra. But if you mess up, you don't give me anything extra. So I said, I know it's not you. You probably, take this to your supervisor if you guys want good customer service, right? And this is a big, largely government-protected monopoly. So, it's like in Canada, there's some reports, like The healthcare system is just kind of collapsing. Why? Because they just, the ER staff is burned out. Nobody wants to work ER anymore. So the ER system is starting to really fall apart. Because people are saying, oh, you know, but there's been this huge demand for services because people deferred their healthcare. Well, if people haven't been using your services and they need your services, then there's going to be all this pent-up demand. You hire extra people, but it's not how things work, right? So for women in particular, it's true for men as well, but for women in particular, if the government is going to pay their bills, the government's going to take care of them in their old age, the government's going to give them health care and pensions and all of that, there are going to be a small percentage of people who are just like, well, what's important to me is my partner stays attracted to me, and that's part of love, and that's part of respect for my partner and marriage as a whole, and so I'm going to work out, I'm going to be pleasant, I'm going to be positive, I'm going to be, you know, really enjoyable to be around. I mean, that's my wife and I for sure. I mean, my wife, she wouldn't believe me the other day. I said, yeah, you're perfect. Like, there's nothing I would change about her. Not one iota of not anything that I would change about her. She's absolutely perfect the way she is. And the welfare state and old age pensions and free health care and government jobs where you can't get fired means that people can just be meaner. They don't have the economic cues that give them negative consequences for being mean and positive consequences for being pleasant. Why do I dislike my mother-in-law? She tries so hard to be nice, but everything she does irritates me. Also, I'm about to give birth to her first grandchild. I don't know, but you can send an email at callin@freedomain.com. That's not enough information. Callin@freedomain.com. We can do a call-in if you like. All right. Did you give up programming altogether when you started putting philosophy into action like never done before? It's so good to have philosophy on the current picture and not piling dust on old books, unless it's those of us who just can't help but love it, who have it. No, I did do some programming. I actually did some programming last year. I did a whole program. It was a wizard that stepped you through choosing shows, the kind of shows. Do you want history shows that are shorter than 90 minutes, that are truth about shows? And it would create a custom feed for you. Do you just want call-in shows that are longer than 2 hours that involve a female, then you could, so you could set up your own feed that would give you, it would give you just the shows that you wanted. And then you could take that feed, you could put it in your podcatcher, and it would just give you all the shows that you wanted. And when new shows met that criteria, you would get those as well. So yeah, it was a really nice piece of code. And I did that some time ago. The part of the book you're reading made me feel sick. Well, it's an evil character. What can I tell you? My husband has been listening to your podcast on peaceful parenting. In 772, you made the case for how timeouts don't violate UPB. We've heard you mention that you don't use timeouts with your daughter. Is that because you never had to resort to one, or have you since changed your stance? If so, why? I ask because we have a baby girl who's 2.5 months old. I appreciate your advice. So I don't think timeouts don't violate UPB. In that, if you certainly, if it's timeouts based on danger, I don't like timeouts. I think that because all you're doing is showing that you're bigger than stronger. Now, if your child is walking towards a road and you pick your child up and carry your child to safety, that is not a violation of UPB. Take a silly example, right? Some blind guy is about to walk into traffic and you tackle him. The only thing you can do is grab him and pull him down so he doesn't walk into traffic. That's not a violation because you're preventing more harm than you're causing. So no, I don't use timeouts with my daughter. We just did a show today. It was an Ask Me Anything for her. She had lots of questions from listeners, and thank you for sending those in. I've never punished my daughter. I've never raised my voice at her, never called her a name, never given her a timeout. We have maybe once a year we have some kind of significant disagreement, which is usually very positive to our relationship, and it's just a changing or adjusting as she's growing up. And I mean, I've never withheld food from her. I've never sent her to bed without dinner or sent her to bed early or told her to stay in her room. Like, I've never, never punished her in any way, shape, or form. And I mean, she's very sensitive, right? So, what are you doing when you do a timeout? If it's punishment for a particular behavior, you're not getting to the source of the behavior. Let's say your child is very aggressive towards another child. You need to find out why your child is aggressive towards another child. And directly controlling your child's body isn't teaching her any self-knowledge. All it's teaching her is that you're bigger and stronger, which she already knows. So, Steph, if you'd had your time over, would you have had six kids? Well, I certainly would have had more, but the world works in mysterious ways. So that is what it is. Let's see here. Me and my missus are awaiting our first child. Long story short, both of us had terrible childhoods. I'm sorry about that. And now live in prosperity and virtue away from our family of origins. Given we've set time aside to just focus on peacefully raising homeschooled kids for the time being, what can you recommend in terms of social groups that share our vision? Is that even a sensible question? Well, I mean, it depends where you are. So I would rather be around people who have the right values for the wrong reasons than around people who have the wrong values, however derived, right? So I prefer the company of Christians in as a whole these days to the company of atheists, because the Christians believe in universal morality and have strong beliefs that way and are committed to raising their children to believe in universal morality and so on, and consequences for immorality and conscience and so on. Yeah, people's relationship to UPB is their relationship to their own conscience. I'll tell you that straight up. Because the conscience is the part of us that universalizes our behavior, in particular our moral behavior, because that's what we claim is universalized, right? We don't claim that our own particular moral preferences are somehow not universalized, because we generally impose them on others. So when you see someone really has a very tense relationship, very hostile relationship, very contemptuous or dismissive relationship to UPB, they're simply revealing their own relationship to their own conscience. Because if you say something is universal, a universal value, universal truth, universal moral, even if you claim that that doesn't exist, you're still imposing it on others, because when other people then propose the universal morality, you reject, you oppose, you scorn, you minimize. So our conscience is that part of us that accepts the universalization and notes any contradiction. So if you say to people, you should stop advocating for universal morality, well, that's a ridiculous and obvious contradiction. You ought not. It is universally an ought not to say there's any universal ought. Well, an ought not is just another ought, right? It's like the other side of the coin. It's not like a different currency. So when it comes to finding social groups, oh no, there's not all atheists. No, that's true. We have one friend who's atheist, but very UPB atheist, right? But the average atheist is just a statist and an amoralist, and is honestly, in my opinion, the average atheist. There's lots of exceptions. The average atheist is barely living above the role of mammal, which is why they tend to be pro-statist. Because for the state, it's a great way for mammals to acquire resources in an amoral way. So yeah, find homeschooling groups. A lot of them are kind of granola. A lot of them kind of flaky. A lot of them kind of conspiratorial. Which, you know, what's the difference between conspiracy theory and fact? Well, number one, time, right? Just a couple of months, and it turns out the conspiracy theory is right. So yeah, don't if you are an atheist but you're into universal morality, don't overlook the Christian groups, because they will share your values even if they don't share your methodology, for the most part. All right. Yeah, I mean, interviews, I appreciate that. I'm really enjoying the conversations that I'm having with you guys. I'm really enjoying the answers. I'm really enjoying the work that I'm doing, that I did on fiction and editing and all of that. Can you do a similar documentary that you did about California, about Canada? Canada seems to be going to hell. I could, but I won't, because I'm off politics. So let's see here. What have I got here? Would you consider migrating to Alaska? I'd have to check with my wife. Don't worry, Alaska. No, I don't think so. Use the example of... let's see here. Would you consider yourself a believing Christian or an atheistic cultural Christian? Probably closer to the latter, I would say. There seems to be a war on Christians in Canada. Oh, Christians, the most persecuted group in the world, without a doubt, are Christians. I mean, just look at the reduction of the number of Christians in the Middle East. I mean, it's just been largely wiped out. It's just astonishing. Did you used to watch Degrassi Junior High when you were younger? I did not. Why does Canada have so few dissidents? Well, I mean, America started with the revolution, and Canada's national motto is peace, order, and good government. So the Canadian government gained a lot of credibility over the years. And, I mean, I think it's fairly safe to say it's squandering that fairly fast. But, you know, that's because things are, you know, closer to where they want it to be. So, if you're still a programmer, if you still work with that, either way, never stop philosophy. I mean, I program for things that I'm doing for myself, but I'm never going to stop the philosophy stuff. There's nothing better than philosophy. For me, nothing better. Nothing better than philosophy. It's like Freddie Mercury with his voice, right? Freddie Mercury had extra teeth, so this is why he had this shark bite of a mouth. And he could have got his teeth fixed, but he's like, no, what if it messes up my voice? What if part of my voice, and he had this double voice layer. You can hear it when he goes, somebody love. He just, this is extra thin high note when he just sings his regular thing. And they've actually studied this. Like he had a double note, and that maybe had something to do with his teeth vibrating or something like that. So he just wouldn't. He had vocal nodules from the 1970s. He had vocal nodules. In fact, you can hear him when he has to sing a really rough voice, like they never did Hitman live. But when he has to sing a really rough on the voice song like White Man, you know, part of the, I don't know, anti-white stuff that came out from Brian May and other people. But when he does White Man, he's like, oh, this is a song that really gets the nodules, right? So he had these nodules, these little growths, but he wouldn't get those fixed because he's like, what if I wake up and I can't sing? Julie Andrews, I think, tried to get those fixed and never was able to sing again. So, UPB question. Is UPB a moral absolutist theory? Everyone has. Oh, sorry. So Freddie Mercury, you wouldn't sit there and say, well, what's your next step? He's at the top of his field. What would the next step for him be? Was he going to go be a baker? Right. So, all right. Is UPB a moral absolutist theory? Everyone has the same moral duties no matter what. Or is it a moral objectivist theory? Your preferences imply oughts. What is true for you is true for everyone else. Well, why not both? And why couldn't you? Everyone does have the same moral duties, for sure. Is it a moral objectivist theory? Your preferences imply oughts. So, what gets you in trouble? Think of the dangers that exist for you in this world, right? Do they exist from private criminals? Or do they exist from bad moral theories? If you look at the property that is taken from you, if you look at the debt that you and your children are hounded into or pillaged from you, if you look at the inflation that is robbing you of half your salary every 7 years these days, right? Does your threat come from individual criminals or bad moral theories, false moral theories? The real danger in life is false moral theories. So UPB says, if you want to impose a moral theory upon me, it must be universal. And if you argue against that, you're arguing for a universal truth, a universal value called argue honestly, be accurate, be consistent, and so on. So UPB is never going to talk a sociopathic criminal out of being a sociopathic criminal. Hopefully it will talk parents into raising non-sociopathic non-criminals and so on. So, yeah, it won't stop one existing sociopathic criminal. But that's not where our risk is in society because we can defend against sociopathic criminals, right? We can have fences. We can have we can be armed. We can have alarm systems. We can hire security guards. We can protect ourselves against individual criminals. We cannot protect ourselves against oligarchically enforced false moral theories. I mean, not really, right? It's certainly impractical and would be destructive. So UPB is simply designed to, you know, if you're a doctor, you go for the plague. You don't go for the hangnail, right? And the plague is false moral theories. Over time, peaceful parenting will eliminate the individual criminals or reduce their prevalence to the point where it's insignificant. But UPB is there to fight against false moral theories. Is it initiation of force to leave a bicycle in the driveway and attack any thief who tries to steal it? A couple in California did this and were charged with assault, while their thieves went unpunished, other than the beating. Oh, so like a bait, you leave something as bait, and then a thief who tries to steal it? It is not the initiation of force to, I don't know about attacking someone who steals your property, whether that's the best way to do it or not, I don't know. probably you'd want to find a more peaceful way to deal with it, right? So, I mean, in a free society, you would have some proof. You'd take a video or something, or you'd have a camera on your, and then somebody would be identified, or you'd have some sort of tracing device on your bicycle. It could be any number of things, right? So the person would be caught, and then they would have to return the bicycle, and they would be dinged for theft, right, in their rating system. Again, all of this is explained in my new novel, The Future. So, no, it is not the initiation of force. If you leave something out front of your house and somebody tries to steal it, that person is stealing from you. Because otherwise, it's saying, well, your property is on your property, but somehow it's not bad for someone to steal it. Of course it's bad for someone to steal it. So, no, I don't think that's... And right, so, I mean, right now, the state is largely defending criminals and attacking people who try to protect themselves, right? Hi, Steph, what if you don't have the time or resources to homeschool? No. Come on, you didn't just ask me that. What if you don't have the time or resources to homeschool? I don't understand that. Make them. I don't understand this at all. You make the time or the resources to homeschool. You got a house, you can't afford it. Unless you sell your house, you sell your house. You got a car, you can't afford to homeschool. If you have a car, sell your car. Bicycle everywhere. I don't know. Like, I don't understand. What if you don't have the time or resources? Come on, man. Of course you have the time or resources. It's a matter of will. Where there's a will, there's a way. Give a man a why, he can bear almost any how. You make it happen. You just don't give yourself that soft, lazy ass wipe out of, well, I just don't have the time or resources. So I'm not mad at you. It's just this whole kind of thinking as a whole. Well, I'm cornered. Our ancestors had to fight off saber-toothed tigers and give birth with no anesthetic, no hospitals, no doctors. And they had to hunt when weak with hunger and come back with nothing and do it again the next day. They had ice ages, medieval warm periods, plagues, pestilence, wars, armies, sickness. And we're here because they made it. They made it through. And only the strongest made it through. So you have received the greatest genetics in the history of the universe. The most strong-willed, resolute, capable, competent, excellent, irresistible, unstoppable genes in the entire history of the universe have been gifted to you. God, what a gift. What an unbelievable gift. There are no losers. In the gene pool that made us who we are. Because if you were a loser, you didn't make it into the gene pool. You didn't pass along. You think of this as a triangle, right? It's a big triangle, right? At the beginning, bunch of people, whole bunch of creatures, whole bunch of people, right? Evolution whittles down. Boom, you're the tip of the spear. You're the point, tiny little point, snowflake on top of the giant iceberg. Everyone who couldn't find a way to survive and reproduce has been weeded out of the gene pool. And they died literally by the hundreds of millions, if not billions, to deliver to you the most unstoppable, strong-willed, immovable, competent, powerful genetics the world has ever seen. These people who survived unbelievable hardships, who managed to mate, you know, people were having babies in World War II. Women were having babies during the Blitz. And now we're all like, oh, there's a stay home order and it's tough to get to work and I'm not having any babies. My God. Women had babies with guys who were heading off to war, very unlikely to return. No welfare state. They found a way to make it work. Everything that you think will stop you is within you. You think it's out there, it's going to stop you? Everything you think will stop you is inside you. Just step over it and move the fuck on. What if you don't have the time or resources to homeschool? I want you to imagine, this is what I do. And look, I'm subject to these, right? So what I do is I imagine going back maybe 10,000 years. Maybe 10,000 years. And complaining to the people three steps ahead of a pack of saber-toothed tigers and some giant fucking wolves. Kids on their back, woman pregnant, jumping over crevices, trying to get to some warmth because the ice age is chewing up their feet with frostbite. And saying, you know, I might have to make a few sacrifices to homeschool. Might be a little tricky. Okay, would they trade their life for yours? You want to spend a day in the moccasins of your ancestors to get a deep, deep fucking appreciation of how good you have it now. Yes, culture is shit. Yes, there's lots of errors and falseness and hypocrisy and moral turpitude and hypocrisy. I get all of that. But still, seriously, get in a time machine, go back 10,000 years or 100,000 years. Think February in Scotland, 20,000 BC. Think February in Scotland, 20,000 BC. Oh my God. Like, I had an ankylosed tooth, right? Up here, right? Which is the tooth that had never separated from the bone, was fused to the bone. Would have killed me because it's really tough to clean and all that, right? But I managed to get it taken out. I got a bone graft. Right? This is why this side of my mouth droops a tiny little bit. It does some damage to the nerves. Okay. Now I want to go back in 100,000 years or 50,000 years and say to one of my ancestors, you know, my mouth droops a tiny little bit because I had a painless tooth extraction and a bone graft that took perfectly. He's like, yesterday I had to hunt on a broken ankle. Please, shut up. Stop your whining. Because I'm not going through all of this to deliver you the most glorious genes for all humanity. I'm not going through this. So that you can whine about things being tricky to homeschool. What if there was no excuses? What if there were no excuses for you? No excuses for me. And again, listen, I'm in there with you, brother. I'm in the foxholes as well. And everyone on the planet got these genetics. Everywhere. Every continent. Everyone on the planet got these genetics. This incredibly weeded out survival power. What if you gave yourself no excuses? Or what if you imagine kneeling before some Kalahari Bushmen or some guy in Africa from 100,000 years ago and saying, you know, I think I'm going to have to cut down on air conditioning to save some money because it's tough to homeschool. He'd be like, what's air conditioning? It's like, oh, it's how you can keep a temperature at a balmy 72 degrees when it's 3,000 degrees out. He'd be like, your complaint is that you have slightly less of that? I have none of that. So I hope you don't mind the rant. Don't take it personally. I have this conversation with myself as well. What if you lived a life without excuses? What if? What if you just said, yeah, well, whatever I want to do, I can do. You know, when I was getting all these bomb and death threats when I was touring in Australia or other places, I was doing a speech at a men's rights conference in Detroit some years ago, death threats, bomb threats, you name it, right? People threatened to blow up the whole thing. Yeah, okay, well, my ancestors had to go over trenches in World War I into withering, body shredding, machine gun fire. The body count and almost fairly close to my family history. My odds of survival are way better than theirs. They did it. What does that mean for me? You think of what everything that your ancestors had to do, those genes are still within you. Right? In fact, it's more powerful because they gave you this. I would say, just think about a life without any excuses. Without any excuses. Just try it. Try it on for size. Just try it on for size. An honor for those who suffered to give us what we have, but so often dismiss, reduce, or take for granted. Refusing to give yourself excuses is respect for the suffering that produced you, going back 3 billion years. I mean, think of the first little mice and rodents praying for the meteor, dodging the feet of the T-Rexes. Man, it's tough. Everything around me is 20,000 times my size. I'm like a piece of popcorn to one of these creatures. Everything's hunting me. We're tiny. But it's all worth it. It's all worth it to fight, reproduce, raise our kids, get the food. It's all worth it. As long as millions of years down the road, someone who lives a life of unimaginable luxury can complain endlessly. No thanks. Steph's monologues make the Rocky soundtrack sound like Sarah McLachlan. I saw her once live. She was opening for Sting. All the songs are so sad, but she was quite merry. All right. How can you tell if something is a distraction in the news cycle intended to get people diverted from something more important? Don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I mean, let's say you find out something, so what? You often talk about people avoiding legitimate suffering through self-medication, but how exactly do you go through that? Just stop by stopping self-medication, therapy? What happens to a human psyche when experiencing legitimate suffering, and what are the after effects? I'd love to hear more on this topic. I mean, this is an old theory of mental health, that mental illness results from the avoidance of legitimate suffering. So it's a question, what is suffering for? Suffering is for punishment, to punish yourself. And suffering is for avoidance, right? So when I was a kid, right, I grabbed a nettle. It hurt like hell. Never grabbed a nettle again. I was skeptical. I wonder if it's that bad. Yes, it's that bad, right? You disturb a wasp's nest, you get stung. You don't disturb wasp's nests anymore, right? So pain is for punishment of behavior that is harmful to you. And it is for to train you to avoid said behavior in the future, right? That's what pain is for. So that's physical pain, right? What's psychological pain for? Psychological pain, when you're a child, it's just you internalize the people. If you grow up in an abusive environment, you internalize the people who abuse you so that you can avoid the triggers that lead to the abuse. So if every time you fail to take out the garbage, you get beaten, then around the time of taking out the garbage, you'll feel anxious, you'll get this impulse, and your body's trying to say, take out the garbage so we don't get beaten. But at the same time, you resist, particularly if you're a man, you resist being controlled and bullied in that kind of way. So you get it, right? Now, the people who've harmed you in your life, what is the purpose of the pain, the anxiety, the frustration, the horror, the fear that you experience when you are around them? What is the purpose of that? The purpose for that is the purpose of all pain, which is to prevent recurrence of the pain-causing stimuli. Don't touch the nettle. It hurts. Right? So for me, with my mother, say, whenever I was with her, it was horrifying, horrible, ghastly for me. Because she'd just be this gale of crazy, rampant talk, and I couldn't have any perspectives, I couldn't have any opinions, and I would just check out, dissociate mentally, right? Just freak out, but quietly, right? And just, so then I was like, you know, I put my ears in, and I'm like, I'm done with this now. I don't want to do this anymore. So I tried to have conversations with her about, like, you know, I'd like to have conversations about Not just the things that you want to talk about, but some things that I'd like to talk about as well. Not allowed. Not possible. Punished enormously for that. Okay. Try it again. Like to talk about things, like to talk about my childhood, like to talk about some things different from what you want to talk about, because it feels like a monologue that I'm just kind of sitting having happen to me. I'd like it to be more of a dialogue, you know. It's a reasonable request. It's a bloody reasonable request. Nope. Punished, escalation, aggression, anger. Tried once more time. I can't remember how many times, a couple of times, right? And then I'm like, no. Because I felt bad when I was around my mom. I felt anxious, stressed, upset, angry. And sometimes it would take a couple of days to recover, right? Because significant psychological wound that's getting, you know, poked and salted. So what was the pain, the suffering around my mother? Well, it was trying to get me to avoid the stimulus that caused the suffering, right? Don't touch the nettle. Stop touching the nettle, right? So there was two ways that I could stop feeling bad around my mom. One was to have her stop inflicting all this crazy, insane, aggressive language on me. That was one way to make it a dialogue rather than just me enduring an insane monologue. Or I would stop seeing her. I mean, that's it, right? So I tried to resolve it, tried to make it better, tried to fix it. Offered to go to therapy, and I was in therapy, but together. And no, attack, destruction, avoidance, aggression, escalation, right? So the people who are in your life who get off on causing you to suffer, if they are such people in your life, the people in your life who benefit from your suffering don't want you to experience your suffering. Or if they do want you, if you do and you will experience the suffering, they say it's your fault. It's your immaturity. You're misremembering things. You just need to grow up. You need to let things go. You need to move on. Let's just pretend nothing happened. Because they want to keep... I mean, think of a mosquito, right? Think of a mosquito. It's a very apt analogy here, right? So a mosquito has two things, which are both necessary for the mosquito to feed. The mosquito has painkiller, and it has a proboscis, right? Because if a needle goes into your arm, you'll feel it, you'll swat the mosquito. So the mosquito needs to put the painkiller into your skin so then it can insert its proboscis and take your blood without you noticing. Right? If it has the painkiller without the proboscis, it's just making you itch for no reason. If it has the proboscis without the painkiller, it can't exploit you. It can't take your blood. It can't vampire your arm. So your pain around destructive people is because they're destroying you. But they don't want you to feel that. They want you to blame yourself. They want you to say it's immature. They want you to numb you. They want you to not experience that suffering. Or if you do, blame yourself, attack yourself. In the same way that the mosquito wants to numb you so he can take your blood. He can drain you. It's the same thing with vampires, right? Vampires have painkillers, or you go unconscious, or they hypnotize you, or right? Otherwise, you'd fight like hell. So the people who want to exploit you don't want you to experience your suffering. But for you to not be exploited, you need to experience your suffering, and that's the battle that goes on. The battle that goes on. People who are exploiting you don't want you to feel your suffering, or if you do feel it, they want you to blame yourself. But you desperately need to experience your suffering in order to feel safe. So I think good therapy, again, just my humble amateur opinion, good therapy is the people who side with your need for self-protection. But the people who want to exploit you want you to stay numb. So the point of experiencing your suffering is to identify the proper source of your suffering and to act decisively to remediate it. So in my case, it was my mother's crazy, aggressive, rambling, nutty, offensive talk. And I was like, well, I don't want this in my life anymore. So I either have to get her to diminish it, and if she won't diminish it, I need to stop seeing her. Now, did she want me to go through that process? No. Did I want to go through that process? Not always. Did it make my life infinitely better? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm skeptical of air conditioning on Venus. How do you create negative 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit? I don't know. I think you amp up my mother's heart. All right, so let me go here. All right, what have we got here? Why do you think it's so popular for comedians to joke about being mediocre? For example, making jokes about being stupid, lazy, etc. Well, this is the a bit of the Joe Rogan thing and the Seth Rogen thing. Maybe it's just a Rogan thing. And this is like, it's the stoner loser comedies, right? The stoner loser comedies. So that is out there to hypnotize people into wasting their lives. It's vampiric. It's devilish in a way. And the people who make the comedies, which kind of justify people wasting their lives, being losers, doing drugs, sleeping around, being obsessed with concerts, or things which they observe rather than actually create. If you can get people to observe rather than create, you just get them to waste their lives almost entirely. So that there's a huge demand. Now, you have a self that wants to live and be powerful and create and have an effect on the world for the good. That's you in your essence, guaranteed. Guarantee you, that's you in your essence. Is you want to be powerful, you want to wake up in the morning, produce something great and glorious and good for the world at whatever level. Could be a great day with your kids. It could be something in your neighborhood. Could be something larger. But the more positivity you bring to the world, the more corrupt people and evildoers and exploiters are thrown into sharp relief. You turn up the light, you can see things, right? And if you are a light in the world, one of the first things your light will show is immoral people. They don't like that. They don't like the life. They don't like the light. Or both. So they'll put all this stuff out there about how it's kind of cool to waste your life, to get involved in drugs, to sleep around, it's hip, to get really involved in music and other things that you simply consume rather than create. It's a total lie, of course. So the people who make these movies have been incredibly ambitious their whole lives, but they don't want the competition. They want, I assume, I have no idea about the individuals, but in general, the general pattern is, right? So people can either challenge you to rise up and be fully human, or they can say, live down at the animal level and simply tickle your serotonin receptors, right? Chase the endorphin off a cliff. I mean, it's like the people who downgrade marriage, right? All the people who were like, I don't know how my wife puts up with me, right? Oh, there was this guy married to Emily Blunt. And he was telling this story about how he was coming into the airport security or customs was saying, oh, you're an actor. Would you be in anything I've seen? It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I'm married to Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt's very attractive. This guy's kind of average. And he was like, and the customs officer was like, Emily Blunt, you? Right? So, oh, I'm not worth Emily Blunt, blah, 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 right? It's just a way of downgrading everything. Can you discuss how a positive parent relationship might also be internalized and how that works the same slash differently? Oh, I mean, I can give you a very clear example, which is my daughter, when she's around other kids and they're doing something difficult, she's like, you go, you got this, right? It's a phrase I've used, right? So, have you heard the news that scientists are now saying that depression isn't caused by low serotonin and medication may not be the best way to fix depression? What do you think about this? I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Yeah, I read this yesterday. It was in the. I'll get you guys sorted up here. I'll get you guys caught up here. It was in the Daily Mail. Okay, the Mail, serotonin. Ah, yes, here we go. Yes, depression is not caused by low serotonin levels. Study casts doubt over widespread use of potent drugs designed to treat chemical imbalance in brain. Today's landmark findings, when is this from, 19th July? So yeah, yesterday. Today's landmark findings call into question society's ever-growing reliance on antidepressants like Prozac. Millions of patients take selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors designed to boost the levels of the feel-good chemical. University College London researchers argue, however, that there's no convincing evidence that depression is caused by an imbalance of the chemical. One academic involved in the study described the findings as eye-opening, and that everything I thought I knew has been flipped upside down. Lead author Professor Joanna Moncrieff, a psychiatrist, said, quote, the popularity of the chemical imbalance theory has coincided with a huge increase in the use of antidepressants. Thousands suffer from side effects of antidepressants, including severe withdrawal effects that can occur when people try to stop them, yet prescription rates continue to rise. Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. One in six British adults and roughly 13% of Americans take antidepressants. Well, that's the official numbers. I'm sure it's much higher on the black market. We believe the situation has been driven partly by the false belief that depression is due to a chemical imbalance. It is high time to inform the public that this belief is not grounded in science. So, yeah, I'll put the link here. You can read this. I mean, I did the truth about mental illness forever and ever ago. So, yeah, there's no proof. There's no proof for any of this stuff. And, But people would... okay, so if you're depressed, let's say you're depressed because you're surrounded by assholes, right? Let's just say you're depressed because you're surrounded by assholes. Do the assholes want you to take a pill or figure out that they're assholes? Of course the assholes want you to take a pill. And unfortunately, if you're raised by assholes, you tend to be asshole compliant. And so you'll do what the assholes want and take a pill rather than deal with that, so... All right. When are you going to offer your Art of the Argument book for free, as it has no value any longer in society today? I'm not going to do that. It takes time. All right. Solzhenitsyn has a right to feel depressed. It can be natural under certain conditions. For sure, yeah, absolutely. But depression tends to be, I think, your mind is kind enough that if you can change something, you'll feel negative stimuli for not changing it, right? If, right? I think your brain is pretty good at figuring out what you can change and what you can't. So if, you know, getting older, you get creakier, you have less energy, you have to get up at night to pee, you know, there's a couple of things that change when you get older. But every old person isn't depressed, right? It's because you can't do anything about getting older other than kill yourself, right? So... I think that the depression, the anxiety, all of that feeling is because you think you can do something about it, so you should explore doing something about it. If you're trapped in some horrible gulag, I mean, it's going to be unpleasant, but I don't think you're going to feel that stress of, I should change it, because it's going to be tough. Solzhenitsyn, too, this is a pretty wild thing, right? So I remember, so back in the 80s or whatever, when I first really got into the anti-communism stuff, the early 80s, I remember him saying, you know, communism is making its advances in the West and blah, 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 blah. And I just remember thinking, but there's simply no way. There's simply no way that this ideology that has killed and enslaved so many, a third of the planet and 100 million people just in the 20th century, there's simply no way. There's no way that people could fall for this. It's like expecting slavery to come back. But control the culture and, right... I was prescribed Ritalin recently, and while it improves my productivity immensely, my rage feels more actionable after it wears off, and sadness feels far more vivid. What are your thoughts on this? Read the warning labels, man, and talk to your doctor. All right. More scientific corruption. Oh, yeah. I mean, science has become like the high priests. Like, back in the day, before the Protestant Reformation, only the priests could read the Latin that was the Bible. And you just go to the priests and they'd say, well, this is what God says. And you, right? When people could read the Bible for themselves, that was a different matter, right? So the stamp of divine authority was how bullies got their way in the past. But now there's a new thing called follow the science. A new thing called follow the science. It's all science, all base. I mean, what Fauci says, if you disagree with me, you're disagreeing with science. Okay, Mr. Pope. So... they just need a word to wave around that crushes questions, right? A word to wave around that crushes questions. A word could be racist, sexist, homophobic, Islamophobic. It could be anti-vaxxer. Like, some phrase which just kills debate. The people who want to bully you, they just need a phrase that kills debate. And follow the science now. Science is not something to be followed, man. The whole point of science is skepticism and questions. on opposition to all existing conjectures and hypotheses. That's what science is. Follow the science. It would be like saying, follow me. Would make no sense. That's why I never tell people what to do. Would make no sense. I am not philosophy. Following me is the opposite of philosophy. I mean, if I've gained credibility, maybe you listen to me a little more carefully. Great. I think that's, I've earned that, I think. Follow the science. The only place you can follow a science is off a cliff. It's turned it back into a new theology, right? Science is the new theology, or state science is the new theology. All right. What are the typical causes of distant fathers? Sorry, that's too open-ended a question. Your daughter's school colleagues, not school colleagues, just kids she knows, will remember that you got this for the rest of their lives, decades from now. The day they think they won't be able to make it, they'll remember that. Bless her. Yeah. She's really positive and encouraging that way. It's beautiful to see. Does Steph read his DMs on here from subscribers? What is the best method to reach you? Yeah. If you're at freedomain.locals.com, especially if you're a subscriber, man, I respond to incentives like everyone else. It makes me so angry for science to be plundered like this. I mean, look, if the state could be controlled, I wouldn't be a voluntarist. If the state didn't always end this way, then I wouldn't be a voluntarist. All right, we got another couple of minutes. In dating, why is it worse to waste the time of a 30-year-old than a 20-year-old? Is it analogous to a market where old cars are more expensive and depreciate faster than new cars? I mean, if a woman who's 30 has really got to have kids. She's got to get into a stable relationship, a long-term stable relationship aiming at kids, right? That's her job. If she wants to have kids, she's got to just do it right now. So if you're dating a 30-year-old woman for 2 years, you have significantly reduced her chances of having children. Now, if you date a 20-year-old woman for 2 years, also not great, because if you date someone for a long period of time and then the relationship breaks up, you have programmed them to not feel secure at least until that time has passed. Last seen 7 months ago, I don't know what that means, but I'm on freedomain.locals.com every day. Every day. So I don't know what's going on. Yeah, that's not me. I don't know what's going on with that. All right. So you really do have to be sensitive to what you're doing to society as a whole. Don't get into relationships. Don't get into relationships where you have no possibility, no particular thought of getting married and having kids. Doesn't mean everyone you date, you got to understand that, right? But if there's a significant red flag to the point where you, like, let's say you want to have kids, you start dating a woman, you talk about this, which you should, because the whole point of dating is for kids, right? You want to have kids, you start dating a woman, she says she doesn't want to have kids, stop dating her. Just cross your fingers, we'll get close enough, she'll want to have kids once she knows how wonderful I am, and well, after we get married, no. Don't call, because you're calling her a liar. Don't date people where there's no chance of settling down and having kids. If you want to settle down and have kids, I assume most people here do. All right, why do I want my ACE score to remain high? Need for sympathy for others? To shock people? The score is 8, but could be 7 because they don't count domestic violence instigated by women towards men as an extra score. I mentioned this topic in a recent show. Yes, that is right. That is a limitation of the ACE score. I mean, you could include these days government schools as an ACE score because they really are opposing basic reality. So why do I want my ACE score to remain high? I would imagine it's because there's a heroism in overcoming a negative ACE or high ACE score, and you want the honorable medals and you want to feel like you've achieved more. But it could also be a way of lowering your expectations. So for me, I had a bad childhood, very bad childhood. So I could have said, listen, if I'm just not a criminal and I've got a reasonable job, I've done fantastically. And statistically, you'd say, okay, you know, it doesn't become a criminal. has a reasonable job. He's doing well, given where he started from, right? So if you want to feel like a hero for overcoming a bad childhood just to mediocrity, I would say that's still letting the bad childhood win. For me, the childhood was in the rear view when I said, who I am is completely detached from where I came from. Who I'm going to be is completely detached from where I came from. Doesn't mean I have no history or anything, but I'm not going to say my bad childhood means that X, Y, and Z. Because then your bad childhood wins by paving your way to mediocrity with the endless footsteps of excuses. So again, I don't know. Could be something like that. Does the threat of violence from a non-parent add to the ACE score? My brothers had an argument once, and one brother started chasing the other around with a machete. I would say that's pretty much an adverse childhood experience, but it's not a Bible, right? It's just a methodology for trying to gauge some things, right? So I would say it's not a Bible. All right, I'm running low on steam. I forgot to eat before. I was real busy with checks, so I forgot to eat before. I'm running a little low on steam, but if you have a big yearning, burning question, I'd be happy to do it now. Thanks so much for answering my questions. Great answers. Thank you very much. Listen, thank you guys for... I'm a jazz. Like, I'm jazz. I used to be more rehearsal. Now I'm jazz, right? So in jazz, you play in the moment, right? So rather than, you know, big PowerPoints that take a month to put together, now I'm bouncing off your fantastic questions and your fantastic comments in this. So everyone who triggers a rant in me, thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that out in me, for playing with me in this way. You know, we should play like children play, which is very seriously. DJ Jazzy Steph, that's right. Steph, thank you so much for everything you do. Could you compare parenting and government? I absolutely can, and I have. Freedomain.locals.com, subscribe, and you get the free book, The Future. That is entirely right. Running low doesn't mean ran out, does it? Does not. You're welcome. This is better than any college philosophy course. Well, I hope so. I mean, that's a pretty low bar these days, but I hope so. I have a question. Should a virgin boy be afraid of resentment dating a non-virgin woman? Afraid of resentment? Resentment from the non-virgin woman? It depends how far she strayed from virginity, right? I mean, the more... it's dick dose dependent, right? DDP. Dick dose dependent. The more dick that's been run through a woman, the more likely she is to break up with you, divorce you, and just... Goad Stephen into ranting about the American military. Boy, let it never be questioned whether the pen is mightier than the sword. You can take down an entire military with woke ideology. It's just astounding. I saw a show recently where the father of the guy resented the mother for that. Well, I assume that that's fairly immature. And love the show. Thanks, Steph. Quick question. When are you posting the next call-in show? They're more addictive than purple Skittles. Are Skittles getting sued now for being unfit for human consumption? Did they get that right? So listen, again, don't mean to pump it too much, but it's a great platform, freedomain.locals.com. There are dozens of call-in shows up there, some of the more wilder ones that have never made it to public release and may never make it to public release. So if you're hungry for call-in shows, freedomain.locals.com and all of that. Can you explain what you mean when you say treat people as they treat you, but in regards to bad children? Well, there are no real bad children, because children are not free to choose their environment or their stimuli. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean that children aren't dangerous, right? There's no such thing as a bad wolf. Doesn't mean that wolves can't be dangerous. So children are in a state in general. I mean, maybe my mid-teens and so on, it starts to change. But children as a whole are in a state of pre-morality because they're not in a state of free will. So one's moral responsibility is related to one's capacity to exercise practical free will. Practical free will is not the existential kind. Practical free will is you can actually change your circumstances, your society, right? Your environment. So, if I have hypermasculine moral values, how do I find a suitable therapist? Possibly one that is more objective and less emotional. I have a show, How to Find a Great Therapist, 1929. You can just go to fdrpodcast.com, do therapist, and all of that, so... Robert Barnes said he wants to have you on his show. That's very kind. It's very nice. I like Robert a lot. All right. Last questions, comments? Yes. There's your GIF. Somebody's typing. Two people are typing. There are typingness. typing is occurring. I don't mean to typecast myself. Thank you for the answers. You're welcome. Again, thank you so much for the question. It is a glorious friction, sparks, firing, majesty relationship with these. All right. So I'm not going to sure if people are just chatting to say bye or whatever. But yeah, so you can send me messages at freedomain.locals.com. You can support the show. Please, please, please. If you don't want to do it that way, you can go to freedomain.com/donate. Thank you, guys. Why don't you do more locals lives like this versus DLive? Oh, no, I'm doing mostly locals lives now. DLive I haven't done for a while. So they don't have a tipping mechanism. This one does, huh? Slightly better. All right. Cupid, draw back your bow. Thanks, everyone, so much. Have yourself a wonderful evening. I will talk to you Friday night. And I'm trying to aim for like Sundays at 11 a.m. for our European listeners if you have live calls and questions. And thanks, everyone, for your patience as I put together the call-in shows. There was a bunch of edits to do. People chatty about their names. So thanks, everyone, so much. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Lots of love from up here. Take care, my friends. Mwah. Talk to you soon. Bye.